Please report, counsel. This pretensive joinder case is like a lot I've been involved in over the last 10 years representing BJC Health System and a number of other entities who have challenges with venue. This case is, in my view, fairly straightforward. It's one that involves BJC Health System parent corporation, one of its affiliate hospitals, and a private physician, all involved, the latter two, I should say, involved in health care of plaintiff's son of Paymar at Boone Hospital in Boone County, Missouri. This case is pretty straight up. The pleadings is where we start. Pretensive joinder, as you all well know, two-pronged disjunctive test. And our position is that in this case, the plaintiffs have not pled claims they need to plead to be able to sustain a claim against the parent entity. And I would say, for starters, agency is an area that clearly the petition and even the First Amendment petition, and we take, for pretensive joinder assessment, we take the petition in its current form. Still, the issue, of course, is what did the plaintiffs know at the time they filed the lawsuit? But corrected, if they had corrected things along the way, they could have. Plaintiffs did file a First Amendment petition. The allegations stayed essentially the same, though. They did eliminate, I believe, one paragraph that had some elements or some language of control in it. But here, all they pled is that all the defendants basically were agents, servants, employees of one another. It couldn't get more conclusory than that. The proponent of agency under Missouri law has the burden of pleading and proving that. They have to allege ultimate facts, which, if true, would establish the agency.
And if they do establish or they did sufficiently plead any kind of agency, is that sufficient, or does it have to be an agent for healthcare purposes?
I think in this kind of case, Judge, where you have two corporate entities and they have pled both the BJC Healthcare parent and Boone Hospital or CHLI Services are separate corporate entities, I think that does change the game in terms of what has to be pled. Because obviously we see from the cases such as Ritter, there's a BJC versus Neal case from October of 2002, as well as this court's decision from November of 2003, BJC versus Neal, where there's a control element here when you start talking about trying to short circuit between two corporations and get around that corporate entity doctrine. And I think the cases are clear. There has to be not just an allegation generally of control, but there has to be control alleged specifically to the health care at issue. And what we see in these cases all the time is everyone alleging all sorts of other things that they think, I guess if you want to think of it as, bricks in the wall or whatever, that somehow that gets them to where they need to go. We're talking really about, Missouri law is clear, two exceptions, alter ego or this vicarious liability where there's direct participatory conduct and control by the other entity.
Opposing counsel argues that BJC holds out its affiliates as being more connected to BJC than may in fact be the case, and that in itself provides the basis for holding BJC in the case.
I think what they are going for are things that are admittedly, there is information on the website about the relationship between the BJC parent and the affiliate hospitals, but the website's also pretty clear that those are separate hospitals. They've been separate hospitals. This is not a classic parent forms all the subsidiaries under it. This is more like a federation. That is, these hospitals all existed before the parent entity existed. They formed the parent for business purposes, for a lot of reasons that's explained in Ritter, but things like access to markets for funding, cost savings by being able to buy supplies on a consolidated basis or by group purchasing. The fact that all these different things on the website is all good and well, but again, Missouri law is clear. There's two exceptions to the corporate entity doctrine. The plaintiffs in this case, although they argue in their brief that they've pled alter ego, they haven't pled alter ego. The one case they mentioned that deals with alter ego, the Real Estate Investors 4 case at 46 Southwest 3rd 51, they cite to that and argue it, but then they basically walk away from it in the brief and say, well, there's 11 factors here that this case sets out about alter ego. It talks about undercapitalization, total control by the parent, et cetera, and then in the brief, they don't even do anything with it. And the reason they don't is there's nothing here about that. There's nothing in this record that would support that Boone Hospital is a sham, that it's been used by the parent to perpetuate a fraud on anybody. And so what we end up getting, though, is lawyers, and it's not just the current lawyers, arguing about a lot of different things that seem to show a relationship. But again, that's not, you got these two exceptions.
Now, obviously, when we're doing a venue, we don't have a lot of, quote-unquote, discovery. So the website, does it say anything about We're connected to Barnes Jewish Hospital, Barnes BJC Hospital, with the excellent experts and the expertise, and that's connected to Boone County and makes Boone County Hospital much more connected hospital.
I don't think it talks in terms of quality of service such as excellence. At least I don't think it does. I think the issue there, though, still is that hospital may well say, hey, you know, we're affiliated with the BJC health system. We're a better place to come. That's okay. That's not the same as saying BJC will control your health care. And if you remember the Ritter case, the court got pretty specific and said the plaintiff needs to show there what did Christian Hospital do. That was the affiliate hospital in that case, the affiliate of the parent. What did Christian Hospital do to control the surgery? Again, another surgery case by a private physician. And they got pretty specific and said it needs to be down to the details of what happened. And there isn't any evidence of that. That's not what the parent does.
I know you're relying heavy on the Ritter case, and that's the Court of Appeals decision from 99.
Sure.
Almost 10 years old. And in that case, they talked about the affiliation agreement was not a subterfuge. How can we rely upon that today? I mean, could the agreement be different? Couldn't the relationships be different between these entities?
I hear what you're saying, Judge, and I'm assuming you mean in the context of a venue issue, could the plaintiffs have a good faith basis to believe that there's something else that's going on? I guess I would say to you, is it possible? Theoretically, sure. We have submitted the affiliation agreement here as part of the record in this case. The only change there have been no changes about the relationships. I will say that in 1996, Barnes Hospital and Jewish Hospital legally merged and became Barnes Jewish Hospital. So that changed. Other than that, the original institution members, that is the signatories, are there. So I think my argument about that, Judge, is what we have out there is from the Ritter case in 99, we have the BJC Neal case from the Court of Appeals in October 2002, which talks about the affiliation agreement. We have this court. I'm sure the affiliation agreement was a part of the record in this the case we argued here 5 years ago. It is what it is, and I think my point, too, is I think if the plaintiffs had found anything different about it that they thought would help their case, we'd have heard about it by now.
Is there anything in the agreement that I know one of the earlier cases, I'm not sure which,
sure,
dealt with the issue of the parent controlled the budget of the affiliate hospital and basically limited what they could spend on certain aspects of patient care, and so could be kept in because they might be negligent in that regard?
I think what the affiliation agreement really talks about, Judge, is the approval. The parent entity can approve the budget. They don't tell the hospitals what to spend on or what to buy. They certainly don't get into specific decisions about what it should be. But even at that, for example, if the claim in this case was that Dr. Pitt should have had available to him the newest version of the instruments he was using, but BJC somehow prevented the hospital from buying those, okay, then I think you're in play on the issue. But just to say they have approval of the budget, the cases are clear. Ritter does talk about it. I think the Hefner v. Dousman case, although it's not this affiliation agreement, that was an affiliation agreement between Barnes Hospital and Doctors Regional, DRMC, and that opinion does a nice job of discussing, again, the details of the involvement and the give and take between Barnes Hospital and that hospital in terms of providing health care. And they say, yeah, there's a lot of things they do here, but in terms of can Barnes Hospital say to DRMC, do it this way, there's nothing in that affiliation agreement that allows that. And in this case, if you recall, the way the powers are allocated is that some powers are specifically allocated to the parent. That is, again, think of this group of hospitals getting together and saying, okay, here's what we'd like the parent to do. So we give it these powers. Everything else is reserved to us. Everything we haven't given the parent is still ours.
And the 11th Amendment.
Kind of like that, Judge. Yes. And so those things include, of course, day-to-day health care. They haven't granted that to the parent. They still, of course, hire their own employees and fire them. They issue medical staff privileges on their own. The parent entity is not involved in that. So there's all those functions that are still closely held. And if you remember, the affiliation agreement still talks about wanting to make sure that the hospitals still have their autonomy to do what they did. I think as a practical matter, you can imagine the people who are running those hospitals decided to basically throw in with other hospitals to do this. There's always going to be some degree of wanting to kind of still be your own hospital, all the people that run those facilities. So So in any event, the control is a big part of the problem here for the plaintiffs. They generally allege control. They never actually say what BJC supposedly did to have Dr. Pitt do or perform the surgery the way he did. And I think Ritter's clear that that's what has to happen. I think even this court's decision in 2003, which basically took a quote from the October 2002 decision that was a BJC Neal decision out of the Court of Appeals, the Eastern District, again, talking about this control issue. It's a paramount issue in the case. And, you know, like I say, what I see time and again, not just in this case, is people want to dance around that because they don't really know. And I would say, too, that one of the things that the plaintiffs showed in terms of what they didn't know, they described themselves at page 33 of their brief as outsiders to the specific control exercised by BJC in the abdominal laparoscopic procedures. And that's what Ms. Kamar had, was surgery, laparoscopic surgery. And so here they are at this stage in the game saying we're outsiders. Okay, well, that's okay, but if you're outsiders, you shouldn't be saying, just on some assumption, that you think, you know, you can allege these things when they're basically saying they don't have a basis for it. And I think that's where we're at, too, at this point. Let me talk briefly about the second prong of pretensive joinder, which is there enough information in the record to support a claim? Clearly, there's not. Dr. Pitt's got affidavits saying he was not an employee of Boone Hospital or BJC.
Do we need to reach that issue today?
I don't think we need to reach it. I'm just saying, here's some evidence of what Dr. Pitt's status is. The only allegation of him being an employee of anyone in the petition was of his own medical group. And the medical group is also sued as a defendant, for example. So I think it's just one of those things, the record right now, all the things that the plaintiffs have turned in, if you will, different BJC publications on guidelines, code of conduct, none of those things talk about delivery of health care. I mean, they're just things that the parent does.
Now, in order to do a procedure in the hospital, do they have to have privileges? It used to be a term called have privileges at the hospital. And the hospital, I assume, would have to have some assurances that that doctor had a certain amount of expertise to perform a procedure at their hospital.
Sure, that's correct, Your Honor. And again, medical staff privileges, that obligation, that function, if you will, is specifically reserved still to the affiliate hospitals in the affiliation agreement. And that's referenced in our brief as well.
Thank you, counsel.
See, my time is up. Thank you.
Ms. Lockwood.
May it please the court, counsel. A writ of prohibition is not proper in this case because we have adequately pled a cause of action against BJC, the resident defendant, and at the time the case was filed, I had a good faith belief that I had a viable claim against BJC. The pleadings is where we do start with the argument in the pretensive joinder analysis. And Judge Stith, I think your question was a good one. Is there a requirement that we specifically plead something different when we have a case against BJC versus a medical negligence case alleging an agency relationship? And what I have done is I think I have adequately pled both, taking the language that was used in the SSM v. Neal case and incorporating it into the petition. Counsel argues, as relator, that we have not pled that the health care at issue caused any damage in this case. If you look at paragraph 6 to both the petition and the first amended petition filed in the case, we've specifically alleged that BJC exercises control over Boone Hospital centers in many areas, including areas that affect the medical care provided to the plaintiff Sadaf Kumar in 2004, and that the aforementioned hospitals and health
centers. But you need a factual basis for that statement. You need to have a good faith factual basis for making that allegation. What is that?
And moving on to the good faith basis, Your Honors, I have been involved in a number of cases against BJC. Two of them have gone up to the Eastern District on a writ. What I have set forth in response to the various motions are all of the ways that BJC exercises control over their affiliate hospitals, including Boone.
These are all generalized. Looking at the two briefs, what it comes down to, it seems like, is a disagreement over what kind of control you need to show. If you're not able to meet the first threshold possibility of piercing the corporate veil, then you come to the issue of control. Ritter talks about control over the particular medical situation, such as, you know, if they taught them how to do these kind of laparoscopies and did it wrong, or other kinds of control or budgeting. You're talking about general control over the entity. They're saying it has to sort of tie in with a specific case. Do we have some guidance on is one of those two? Is it some mix? What is our standard? Because you seem to be, you, it's like, as I see it, your argument on control would apply to all their affiliate hospitals for all their medical procedures, as opposed to this particular hospital or this particular procedure.
I think that the question at this stage of the proceeding, though, at the pleading stage, is do we have a good faith belief that they controlled the health care at issue? And because they have established a Center for Quality Management, because they have established a code of conduct, because they have established a corporate compliance program, and because I'm aware that they have established, BJC has established many system-wide policies that affect health care, I've got a good faith belief that they have affected the health care when laparoscopies are performed or when they have surgical consults to treat a woman with persistent abdominal pain.
But would this, if this sort of general control, so in effect we hold them liable because they're, the affiliate hospitals are in effect agents for them, as I understand your argument, is that kind of a lowering of the standard of a piercing the corporate veil in effect? Because it doesn't seem to be focused on a particular negligence, but on this control is sufficient to always hold them responsible. And would that be undercutting the rule that you either show specific control or piercing the corporate veil?
No, I don't think it would be, because what I have done is I have adequately pled the specific control, and then the next inquiry is, did I have a good faith belief? And my good faith belief is based upon the fact that BJC has set health care standards across
but
the board.
But you would have a good faith belief that they control every patient in every hospital and every affiliate, if I understand, under the same basis.
Not necessarily. My good faith belief is based upon the affiliation agreement and the system-wide policies that I'm aware of. And those are going to, they might not affect somebody who's seen in a clinic of a hospital, mm-hmm. but they're going to affect someone who's
surgery
admitted as an inpatient or a surgical procedure, as was the case here.
Do you have a tie between quality control standards and statewide or system-wide policies that has any causation tied to this injury?
Well, actually.
And do you need that, I guess?
I have pled that. And I have actually filed responses to both BJC's motion for summary judgment and Boone Hospital's motion for summary judgment. So those, I believe the record in this case includes my response to Boone Hospital's motion for summary judgment. My response to BJC's was filed after the Eastern District granted the writ application. So I continue to believe
what,
that
what
I...
What do those show about any of your causation, what Judge Breckenridge asked?
Well,
about an allegation that something about the control of the parent was a cause or partial cause of the situation here.
Essentially that Dr. Pitt and others at the hospital had to comply with, and he stated under oath that he did comply with, any hospital standard or BJC standard that was in effect.
Okay.
What we don't have in this case is a BJC policy that governs laparotomies that has not been found. But I think what the court needs to look at is, given the holdings of this court with respect to the law of agency in general and with respect to the law of agency as to BJC and the reasonable beliefs that I had at the time the case was filed, as well as the findings by both the Eastern District Court of Appeals and Judge McCullum, that the facts set out in response to the motion as well as the petition that was filed do adequately state a claim.
You indicated laparotomy procedure has not been found. It doesn't mean it doesn't exist. I mean, if someone performs a laparotomy at BJC, there'd be protocols and the operating rooms would have certain procedures that are set out by the hospital.
That's exactly right. And what we didn't do in this case was delve into all of the specific policies and procedures that might apply to Dr. Pitt or to a laparoscopy procedure. We agreed, as you'll see in the record, to use the venue discovery that was utilized in the Marks case, the Ritter case, the SSM versus Neal case, and the Nomula and Trimble cases, so that we didn't have to waste judicial time, resources, and our clients' money working up that issue. And so the issue really that the discovery was done on was to respond to the motion to transfer venue.
The 42 exhibits.
Exactly right. And those 42 exhibits were actually a conglomerate of exhibits that were taken from those other cases. And so that's why when you're looking through the record in this case, you won't see specific references to laparoscopies or Dr. Pitt's care and treatment of Sadaf Kumar, because that was an agreement that we had with the parties pursuant to the protective order that we signed. We just
could I clarify what your position is? You're saying that you had this history and you had this knowledge that there were system-wide policies and procedures that controlled healthcare in general.
Yes.
And that was from the basis of discovery and other things and other cases. And even though you didn't have knowledge of specific policies and procedures applicable to this case, that general knowledge is enough to support a good faith belief. Is that your argument?
In part it is, Judge, although the allegation in this case does not only involve the surgeon's performance of the laparoscopy. It generally involves the failure to timely detect and treat persistent abdominal pain. And the petition has evolved and changed with the addition and deletion of various defendants. Dr. Morse and her group were originally named, and that allegation primarily involved the prescribing ibuprofen to treat the persistent abdominal pain. Dr. Martin and the internal medicine group was added. That obviously did not involve surgery that was performed. The allegations at Boone Hospital also involved obtaining the informed consent of the plaintiff, which is on a BJC form. And so this case does not, although the relators would like to simplify and break it down to it involves a surgical procedure performed by Dr. Pitt, it's much broader than that. It's the failure to timely detect, treat, and manage this persistent abdominal pain, and the treatment by Dr. Pitt fell below the standard of care because he put the trocar in the liver instead of the abdominal cavity, and then somebody, either he or the Boone Hospital employee, turned on the CO2 gas. And so there's even an issue with respect to who did that. So I don't want to simplify it and say this is a surgical case involving a laparotomy where the trocar was placed incorrectly. We have allegations as to the timing of the surgery, the diagnosis of the ulcers, the treatment of those ulcers, the obtaining the informed consent of the plaintiff. And so there are many, many issues that are set forth in the 30-page petition that's been filed in the case, not all of which focus on that laparoscopy. And so the BJC corporate compliance program, the system-wide policies that we know covers central venous catheter insertions, anything from suctioning patients on ventilators in a systematic way, infection control measures, all of those go to healthcare.
Is there any evidence that BJC controls training, has certain procedures that are used throughout its hospitals and that kind of thing?
Yes, there is.
Okay.
And that's filed in response, again, as part of those 42 exhibits, and it's outlined in the briefing that was filed at the trial court level, which is part of the record.
Does the Boone County Hospital pay for these, the training, procedures, expertise that BJC gives to Boone County?
Judge, I don't believe that they do pay for them, no. I think that that's a service that BJC provides as the parent entity. And they have a real reason to do it because they are holding themselves out as providing health care to folks who go to these 11 affiliate hospitals. In this case, Ms. Kumar, who is brain injured because of the negligence that occurred at the hospital, when she was deposed, she couldn't state whether or not who BJC was or where she went there. That's because of the brain injury. She doesn't even know who her two children are. But there is evidence in the case through the affidavit of her husband, who's actually a physician, who said that, yes, she specifically chose Boone Hospital because of its affiliation with BJC. She went there, and it was Boone Hospital who chose Dr. Pitt. She didn't know Dr. Pitt was not employed by the hospital. In fact, she thought, as did Dr. Hayter, that he was employed by the hospital. 100% of Pitt's surgeries in 2004 were performed at Boone Hospital. Sadaf Kumar never went to Dr. Pitt's office. All of her care was at the hospital. As a member of the hospital staff, in order to get privileges, he had to agree to see patients, to see emergency room consults, and that's what happened in this case. He was called in by a Dr. Lieb to consult on Ms. Kumar's care. So it was Boone Hospital and BJC that chose Dr. Pitt for Ms. Kumar. She ultimately had the decision, but they are the one that said, here's a surgeon who can address these needs in the event that surgery is needed down the road.
You heard my question about the website. Is it marketed, is Boone Hospital marketed to its patients and to who might come there as associated with or affiliated with Barnes Jewish as a way of getting more customers to Boone Hospital? And people going there would objectively think they're going to Barnes Jewish.
I think they would, Your Honor. And BJC on its website objectively touts itself as an employer of 25,000 people, an entity that provides health care at its affiliate institutions, including Boone Hospital. Throughout Boone Hospital, there are signs, 72 signs, I believe, is what the record shows, that of its affiliation with BJC. At the front of the institution, we have the BJC flag flying. So it's
of course
reasonable.
It is affiliated. Is that enough? If you're affiliated, do we then, is that the new test instead of corporate veil? Or I don't think you're saying that.
I'm not saying that at all. But is there evidence that BJC held itself out as a provider of health care? The answer to that question is definitely yes, and that's supported in the record. The issue, I think, Your Honor, is there evidence that, see, my time is up.
You'll have plenty of other opportunities, I believe, this morning.
Thank you.
Just a couple of points in terms of what Ms. Lockwood had to say. Let's take them from reverse and we'll go backwards. BJC, again, on the website, it's clear that there's these affiliate hospitals. I suppose somebody could analyze that for seven straight days and try to figure it out. The point is about all this is, again, what we see in these cases is efforts by the plaintiffs to allege a lot of different things, of the interaction between the parent entity and the hospitals that don't add up to alter ego. If they thought they had a good alter ego case, they would have pled it.
But I see her saying that it doesn't have to add up to alter ego, that there's a third alternative, an agency alternative.
I think what she's saying is that these, because you still have to get down to the control issue. And I think all these different things, when plaintiff is talking about these different policies and procedures, they are in the exhibits. None of those, for example, the code of conduct, the compliance documents, those things don't deal with healthcare. They're talking about like a compliance code of conduct is about people following the law, making sure that nobody's doing something wrong illegally in terms of the running of the business. It's not about complying with medical standards to perform laparotomies.
Counsel, your opponent makes an argument, it seems to me an apparent authority argument, that by some of the representations made and the websites and advertising, that there's apparent authority or control by BJC. If I understand apparent authority, that's really an estoppel type argument used in corporate authority.
Correct.
Issues. Why shouldn't that apply in venue as well? And, if the idea is I have caused other people to believe that this relationship exists, I can't deny it for reasons of actual control. Why should that not apply into cases of venue. If I have caused people in Boone County to believe that I am involved, that I have some control, why shouldn't I be held to that for venue purposes, regardless if I have the control or not?
I think that's an issue that's come up before, Judge. It is discussed in the Ritter case. I think if they were to go apparent authority, first of all, it hasn't been pled, other than just the string side of the conclusory allegations. I think still you're still going to get down to the elements of that apparent authority claim, which is going to involve some the holding out, as you say, then the principal giving authority, expressing authority to that third person, whoever it is, that this person is the one to act on its behalf. And you have not only that issue here, which what would that representation be? No one is going to say that DJC told the plaintiffs in this case that they should come to Boone Hospital because Dr. Pitt is the best doctor to be involved in her health care. There's nothing like that.
Now, is the argument not that it goes to the hospital, Boone County Hospital, but that it doesn't go to the doctor?
I don't think it would go to the doctor as a private physician. I suppose, in theory, if he were an employed physician, maybe that would change it. I'm not sure. It would really depend upon what the representation was. The Hefner v. Dassman case does a nice job of discussing this. In that case, the plaintiffs claimed they saw a billboard that showed the affiliation between Barnes Hospital and Doctors Regional Medical Center. And the court just said, well, okay, again, you're just talking about a general affiliation. You're not really saying what it was, supposedly, about that relationship that caused you to go there. Because that's what the plaintiff said in that case. That's why I went there. And in here, I understand Ms. Kumar suffered a terrible injury. Still have a problem with Dr. Hyder, her husband, saying what she said or knew or whatever. Clearly, that's hearsay. And so we're obviously, you know, shorthanded for that purpose.
Could I ask you one
question? Oh, sure. I'm sorry.
And you focus on something that may occur in surgery, but your opponent argues that the allegations of negligence go far beyond simply what occurred during the actual surgery with Dr. Pitt. Do you agree with that?
I think she talked about the summary judgments motions that are on file. Of course, they're not here before the court. None of the experts were critical of the BJC parents in this case, and I'm sure Ms. Lack would correct me if I'm wrong. That's what happens in these cases. The parent entity is found not to be liable by the experts because nobody from BJC was there.
But again, the policies and procedures that would control the conduct of the employees and under those circumstances, care after surgery is very different than the doctor providing the care during surgery.
There's no policy and procedure at Boone Hospital that had any control or impact on what the other healthcare providers were doing, whether it's Dr. Pitt or the nurses, either turning on the gas or in recovery. They're just not there.
As I see, I'm just reading from the brief, so I didn't go back to the petition, but it says something like BJC holds itself out as an integrated delivery system, employing more than 25,000 people to work to provide healthcare services.
Right.
Now, if it's true that BJC has held itself out as an integrated delivery system to provide healthcare services, isn't that a representation to people that BJC is involved in the delivery of the healthcare people that go there receive?
I don't think it is, Judge. I think what it's saying is that the BJC parent, and again, maybe there's a disconnect between what the layperson thinks about in terms of healthcare and what the healthcare providers think about. The BJC parent is an organization, a corporate entity that these hospitals got together to form because it was going to help them compete in the marketplace. That's why it's there. It's not there to tell them to do procedures a certain way.
And maybe we could get Mr. Bean to answer further questions on that because your time is up.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, good. Thank you, Your Honor.